Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
Welcome to the REI Diamond Show. I'm your host, Dan Breslin, and this is episode 189 on how to release home equity without a refi, monthly payments, or a mortgage with Matthew Sullivan. If you're into building wealth through real estate investing, you are in the right place. My goal is to identify high-caliber real estate investors and other industry service providers, invite them on the show, and then draw out the jewels of wisdom, those tactics, mindsets, and methods used to create millions of dollars and more in the business of real estate. Matthew Sullivan is the founder and CEO of Quantum RE, as well as the host of his own podcast, Hooked on Startups. He is originally from London and has a background working with Richard Branson's corporate finance team, and he was the director of the Virgin-sponsored London Air Ambulance. Matthew joins us today sharing his unique business model of providing cash to homeowners without a refi, mortgage, or monthly payments. The conversation includes tokenization of real estate through blockchain technology, the underwriting process to obtain this cash, and a brief history of Matthew's background as a helicopter pilot and how that applies to running a business. Let's begin.
All right, Matthew Sullivan, welcome to the REI Diamond Show. How are you doing today?
Very well, Dan. Thanks for having me on.
Nice. So you have a bit of a history, which I mean, maybe people already recognize the accent, but do you want to kind of talk about your, where you came from in your career and kind of how it evolved to what you're doing today?
Yeah, of course. Well, I'm originally from England and I moved to Southern California about 7 years ago. And before that, I'd spent about the last, well, the previous 20-something years, and really running my own businesses in finance, telecommunications, and technology. So I think back in the late 90s, I had the amazing privilege of working closely with Sir Richard Branson as well for a few years, and was nice. Involved with a number of companies like Virgin Cosmetics, Virgin Clothing. I was a trustee of the London Air Ambulance that was sponsored by Virgin. So that was a fantastic time. Moved here with a sort of big sort of change in circumstances back in England. So fresh start over here. And really the first thing I did was just launch myself into real estate, which is something that I'd always wanted to do when I was in the UK, but got distracted by, the internet and other sorts of platforms. So it was really a great opportunity to explore this fantastic universe of real estate.
Nice. Okay. So a couple things before we dive into some of our big topic here, but I'm curious. I don't know a lot about the UK real estate. I've heard that it operates a little bit different. It's more constrained. There's not the type of supply of real estate that we have in almost all the markets in the US. Would you mind shedding some light on that assumption for me?
Yes. Well, again, I didn't have any great exposure to the real estate markets in the UK. So all of my real operating experience comes from the US. But I can tell you from my experiences as a as an investor, as a business person in the UK, property there, obviously it's a much smaller country, so you've got far fewer people, and the number of opportunities are nowhere near as numerous as they are in the US. So real estate in the US is a multi-layered industry which comprises everything from huge public company investments down to individuals that are fixing and flipping. There's a large private money universe. So a lot of the things like that you don't have so much in the UK. So you don't have that same depth to the private capital. And also, there's just nowhere near the scale of real estate opportunities that you see over here. I mean, if you look at just California, for example, the size of the Californian economy is not far off the size of the UK economy. So that just puts it into perspective. So really is much, much bigger over here, much faster moving, and is much more really the bedrock of the economy as a whole.
Gotcha. California is no small economy, so I guess the UK is neither. I'm curious why the US for you, Matthew. What was the catalyst? Why did you make the decision? And why did you pick California to leave the UK?
Well, in reverse order, it was primarily driven by sunshine. So having lived in the UK for, you know, all of my life, I think really just, you know, some personal circumstances, you know, brought me over here. And, you know, thankfully I haven't looked back. So that's worked out rather well. So, but no, we, you know, I moved to Orange County. So that was the first stop. So, you know, and Orange County was and is a fantastic place. And we moved as a family a few months ago to Utah, really just to explore, you know, different areas and get a bit more space. And really, it was just a way of breaking out, you know, with COVID, to actually, you know, to do something where you're not constrained with the space in California. So that's something that we've definitely done.
Yeah, I'm in Chicago. My daughter was here, and I moved from Philadelphia to Chicago. And believe it or not, I mean, the weather is similar in both places. And people probably joke I've mentioned the weather and sound like I'm complaining and probably hate
Chicago. No, yes.
That's not the case. I love it here in Chicago. But my daughter brought me here, I don't know, 6 years ago from Philly, because she lived here. So I moved to be nearby her while she was still young. And now she's back in Philly going to college, and I'm in Chicago, and I bought my place and, you know, put down a lot of roots here. I love it here. You know, it's like the city, and we have the beach and everything like kind of attached to the city. So it works well for me. I'm surprised that there's a lot of people I've heard recently on the California to Utah exodus. I'm sure the same exodus is going to Austin, Texas, and probably all over the West there, right?
It's funny, actually. So I read this morning that Utah has the largest house price appreciation in the US, I think, over the last sort of 3 to 6 months. So it's funny how we thought we were the only people, but apparently there are more.
Yeah, all the original ideas we get, right? So let's shift gears here. I think I saw somewhere that you were a helicopter pilot. And one of the things that I personally have had to consciously develop, as you know, I went from 26 year old to now 40, my understanding of risk associated with whatever the investment thing, or all things in life, come with some risk and some kind of reward, right? And I think that selecting the right real estate investment, selecting the right stock, if stocks are your thing, or even the right you talked about the right kind of a marketplace or format, whether it was, you know, I'm getting into the internet thing, or I'm doing this financial thing, or I'm doing the real estate thing. There's always kind of a risk profile. I'm curious what being a helicopter pilot, because to me, it's much more risky than flying a plane. The plane, I've flown planes myself, and you can glide to safety if the engines fail, but the helicopter doesn't quite offer that same level of added security, maybe.
they do fly without. So if the engine does decide to stop, you know, gravity tends to take over, but they don't plummet like a rock. They have this. Have you ever seen a sycamore seed?
When it comes, they're kind of like
sort of helicopters down. Exactly. So you have this phenomenon called auto rotation, where because you've got the air going through the helicopter blades, that keeps them turning, which means that you can have a controlled descent. Now, it does happen rather quickly, so you do tend to fall. I mean, I remember when I used to fly a plane as well, you know, sort of Cessnas, and it would be quite dull because you'd be up at sort of 1,500 feet or something, and then your instructor would say, right, we're going to do a practice engine failure. So you'd push the throttle into tick over, and nothing would happen. And you'd say, this is incredibly dull. You begin to glide down, and you've got time to sort of, you know, put the kettle on, have a cup of coffee and maybe a small sandwich, read the papers. And then finally, you know, you're approaching the ground and you can land. But a helicopter is much more intense. So you do have to do a lot of things very quickly to avoid, you know, an enormous amount of paperwork when you land.
Yeah, that's one way to put it. Is there anything you know, you're flying, you take a level of risk. Is there anything, maybe it's not from being a helicopter pilot, one of the lessons I've taken away from kind of the Virgin Richard Branson type of business model is to reduce my risk as much as possible. And the example they use is when he was buying these the fleet of planes, and I can't remember who it was, but he ended up getting this kind of buyback or take back clause with the leases or the financing where it significantly reduced his risk compared to how perhaps another airline might have made the same asset purchases for their company. And so I'm always trying to apply these like risk minimization strategies. And maybe this is a good lead in into our topic on home equity contracts, but what, you know, risk mitigation, how do you view risk, especially coming from a background with Virgin, flying helicopters, and then now getting into real estate? And is there anything you've done consciously to kind of develop a lower risk profile business model with what you currently have going on?
Well, I mean, risk comes in various different forms. So there's a balance, so it's a very large simultaneous equation. So the factors are you've got the risk profile of an underlying investment, and that's something that you can quantify. Then you have other types of risks. In other words, you have potential lost opportunity risk. So in other words, you know, the thing to do if you want zero risk is to do nothing. So in other words, that's on one side of the scale. And then on the other side of the scale, there is more risk where there are more unknowns. So in other words, where you have more unknown elements, where there are more factors that you cannot quantify, you cannot determine what the risk is. So then you're beginning to try and price in uncertainty. So at the very sort of opposite or the extreme end of risk, that's where you maximum uncertainty equals maximum risk, because you can't make an informed decision whether or not you should take this course of action because you don't know what you don't know. So really, real estate is, I think you've got to look at real estate investing as a business, unless you want to be a passive real estate investor where you enable other people to make those decisions for you. If, like you, you are actively involved in real estate investing, then you are really quantifying the risks in each investment. And those risks are what primarily is my risk of loss. So, you know, the rule when you lend money, I just need to know two things. When are you going to pay me back? And the second thing is, when you can't pay me back that way, how are you going to pay me back? So in other words, when your plan A goes wrong, what's your plan B? And so really, my attitude to risk is somewhere in the middle where in order to grow or build a business, you have to step into uncharted territories. So you can't be afraid to do that, but you can't just leap in. And there's that expression, you know, fools leap in where angels fear to tread. So I think really it's always a case of somehow just continuing to push boundaries and just to keep sort of, you know, trying to expand what we're doing without stepping into territory where we simply have no idea what the outcome is going to be.
Yeah, that makes sense. I can I can recall early on in my career, and I was deathly afraid to flip a single house. And I'm sure there's people listening. We have a lot of single family fix and flip investors, agents, and residential. That's kind of the space of our audience, and they're probably like, yeah, I remember that, or maybe they're going through it now. I was deathly afraid, like the numbers weren't going to work out. It was 2006 when I had gotten into the real estate business. I'm thinking, you know, it's any day now that these prices are going to come down by 50, 80%. And I had no like frame of reference because I was young to see the real estate prices maintain a certain level throughout history. They did come down. There was areas where they did drop by 50% a few years later. So the fear and the uncertainty of whether or not the pricing was going to hold up was not unwarranted. But even to this day, I've had deals where I've quantified the risk. I know I'm going to spend $50,000, $60,000 on a renovation. I have a really certain idea of what I'm going to sell the property for that I might miss by, say, 5% in either direction. Yeah. And then I have other ones where we kind of went in a little bit on blind faith with the level of construction maybe. We sort of had an idea that the numbers made sense, but there is this like stepping out on faith that we had to do, and the numbers didn't work out for us. We had things go against us and we lost a bunch of money. But I digress. Why don't we shift gears and we'll talk about the current business model that has you excited right now. If you could define what are home equity contracts, I think it's a unique business. I don't understand it yet at all. So I'm going to be coming from it, you know, totally.
Course, yeah.
I have no knowledge and no experience, basically.
And it's great. I mean, before I do, I mean, I completely agree and understand everything you were saying before. I mean, just one thing. Someone said once that fear is a temporary lack of information. And I think really a lot of that is because it is all about mindset. And I will switch gears in a second. But the critical thing about anything that we do primarily comes from our frame of mind, our state of mind. And I don't want to sort of go onto some, you know, long journey with that, but it's all about how adventurous are you? How willing are you to learn from mistakes? And what you were saying is important because, okay, you might've made some mistakes, but you're not going to make those mistakes again. And really it's the same with when you're trying to build any business, you have to figure out that you're not going to, you cannot possibly understand where your business is going to go. You know, what is that expression? No business survives first contact with a customer. No plan survives first contact with the enemy. But home equity agreements is something that we stumbled across about 5-6 years ago when I was at a crowdfunding conference. One of the first things I did was set up a real estate crowdfunding company. So we were involved at the early stages with these online investment platforms, hot on the heels of the changes in the Jobs Act. But one of the speakers at this conference was talking about shared equity or the ability to invest alongside a homeowner, but without having any ownership in the home. So effectively you piggyback on the homeowner's ownership. The homeowner maintains all rights and privileges. They don't lose any rights, but the investor shares in some of the appreciation of the home. So it's an equity-based funding model. And it's something that is used every day in commercial real estate. So as you well know, there are many different types of funding options for commercial properties. And commercial properties could be anything from strip malls to multifamily homes to you name it. But you have all sorts of different types of debt. So you have the, you know, construction finance, project finance, senior debt, junior debt. Then there's mezzanine, which sits between debt and equity. Then there's lots of different types of equity. So you have guys that come in for the long term, guys that come in with preferred equity and, you know, shared appreciation mortgages. So there's all these different types of funding mechanisms in the commercial world. If you look at a residential home, the homeowner has limited options to how they can fund their equity. So in other words, when they begin to build up their equity, the only option they have today is to borrow money secured by that asset. Now, that might be fine in a commercial sense, but for most people, if they cannot borrow money, they may not qualify. They may have a low credit score. They may not have the income. The circumstances may have changed. Or if they simply don't want to borrow money, if you've spent your life paying off your mortgage, you're sitting on equity, but you just may feel reticent to actually go back into debt because that feeling of having to make those monthly payments, you know, causes some people a lot of stress. So what our programs are, they're equity-based instruments. They are option agreements where the homeowner, in exchange for an option fee, which is the lump sum that we invest, they give us the right to share in some of the current value of the home and some of the appreciation. So the return on investment that we get doesn't come from interest, which it would do if it was a loan. It comes from sharing in the increase in value when the homeowner decides to sell the home.
What are the length? What's the average length of the option agreement? Is this 10, 20, 30 years? Is there a length of time where You compel the homeowner to actually sell the house and cash you out as an investor. I'm kind of trying to figure out, again,
yes. there has to be a duration. So you've got to have a beginning and an end to these agreements. Otherwise, the investors wouldn't buy in, because obviously that's one of the biggest challenges that we came across, a few years ago. Well, who's going to invest in this? Because even though the return profile looks really good, challenges are it doesn't throw off any cash because there's no rent, but also the duration of the agreements. And to answer your question, the agreements run for either 10 years or 30 years. So there's two different agreements that are out there at the moment. Now, that means you can buy back or sell your home at any time during that 10-year period or during that 30-year period. But for a homeowner, the benefit is they get access to cash that is tax deferred. So they don't have an income tax or a capital gains tax liability on the capital when they receive it. And they've got up to 10 years or up to 30 years to settle the agreement. And in the meantime, they don't have any monthly payments. So one of the real advantages of this, access to cash, very tax efficient, no monthly payments. So that works really well for people that don't meet the requirements for loans from a bank. They might have our minimum credit score is, we can go down to like 500 and something. So we really can look at people who have, quite weak credit scores. The more equity they have, then the less we will look at debt to income.
Gotcha. So there is a component of underwriting the borrower in these situations. What's the risk that you're trying to cover with that? Is this like this person's just going to be more cooperative in abiding by the agreement that we have with their option? Or maybe it is they're going to load up other debt and collect, bad credit cards and things that get attached to the property and then maybe weaken your position? Like what, how does that come into underwriting?
Well, the underwriting primarily is on the property itself and the property's likelihood of appreciating. And there are limits to the amount of equity that we will unlock. So the homeowner, in most cases, is left with a minimum 30% equity. So after our transaction and factoring in the amount of loans that they have secured against the property, the homeowner still has about 30% left. So they're still invested in their home. They don't have the situation where we had in the early 2000s where they had no equity. The second point is we look at behaviors. So what is the likelihood that this homeowner is going to continue to be able to meet their current obligations? Mm-hmm. Now, the credit score is probably the best indicator of that. And also, what is the person using the money for? Now, in many cases, people use the money to pay off credit cards, to get rid of expensive debt, to put themselves back on their own two feet, improve their credit score, and then they can continue. Because a lot of the people that we work with who have built up that equity may find themselves in a position where their credit score has deteriorated through no fault of their own. So, and we know how life throws us, curved balls. The equity itself tends to be a good indication that this is a good customer because they've built up that equity. They've been paying their mortgage for a number of years, combined with the credit score, combined with the use of capital, combined with underwriting the property itself. That gives us probably the best indication that we can get of what the likely future behaviors are going to be. We do restrict additional borrowings on the property. So you cannot borrow more money without our permission. So that avoids you really diluting our equity position. Most of the people that we work with are pretty straightforward and pretty sensible people, as you would imagine.
Are your clientele mostly single family, like they're homeowners, they're owner-occupied homeowners?
90%, 95%, yeah, probably about 90% single family, owner-occupied. I'd say probably about 10% will be investment properties. So those are rental properties, people that have small portfolios. We will invest in multifamily up to 4 units. So this is a good program for people that have properties that they may be renting out, where they've got equity, where they can unlock that equity and use that for a down payment on another property. For, because there are, the use cases range from paying off credit card debt to using this capital as a way of investing in other things. So you can diversify into stocks or bonds or buy additional properties. Because it's not debt, you haven't got that ongoing monthly servicing. So for people that built up a lot of equity in their property, you think, well, I don't want to have all my wealth stuck in my house. You know, I want to spread it across different, different venues. So there's that that angle as well.
What is the interest rate fees? Well, you know, let's run through an example deal that you might have done recently to kind of fill in the context here for someone who might be thinking about borrowing this way.
Yeah. Well, the easiest example is, a 30-year agreement. You've got a property with, let's say it's a $300,000 property with a $100,000 mortgage. So the homeowner has $200,000 of wealth trapped in their home. And let's say they've got a credit score of 620, so they're not going to be able to get a HELOC. Maybe they don't have the income. So they're sitting there stuck with $200,000 trapped in their home. So we will invest a maximum of 20% of the current value of the home. Now, in some states, or California in particular, we can go up to sort of 35, 40%. But on average, it's about 20% of the current value of the home. So we can invest up to $60,000 in this scenario. But let's say the homeowner only wants, $35,000, something like that. So that's 10% of the current value of the home. So the agreement would be, here is $30,000. Our minimum is actually $35,000, but this works for this for these numbers. When you sell your home, we'll take that 10%. Typically, we multiply it by 3, so that gives us 30%. So we would get our money back when you sell your home, together with 30% of the appreciation. So from the investor's perspective, they don't just get back their share of the appreciation, they get an enhanced or a magnified share. And what that means is they get a better return than if they were just investing in that home. So it's attractive for the homeowner, for the investor. For the homeowner, it's attractive because they get that lump sum, no monthly payments. And even though 70% of the sorry, 30% of the appreciation is going to the investor, they keep 70% of the appreciation. So it is that sort of partnership idea. Now, there's one other thing. If the property does not go up in value, then the investor runs the risk potentially of not making a return. So in many cases, we will discount the value of the property, start the clock running at a lower figure. So we build in some upside for the investor. So if the property does not appreciate or goes down a little bit, there's still some upside for the investor. And again, all of this is really articulated very clearly at the beginning when we go through the process with the homeowner. This is the offer. The share of the appreciation does not move. So that doesn't change once the agreement is set. The only thing that really changes is the value of the home. And our agreement, the amount that you pay back, is directly correlated to the value of the home. So that's what makes it very different to a loan. Because with a loan, you can go underwater if your property goes down in value. With a home equity agreement, the investor runs the risk potentially of getting a lower return or even a loss if the property significantly falls in value. So it's a very different animal.
Interesting. And is it the option fee itself is not a taxable event until the sale of the property? Is
exactly.
That why?
And that's quite interesting as well, because it's an option agreement. So it's something that's settled at a future point. Now, there's the return on investment that you pay can be offset against the capital gain. So if you have a capital gain in a property and you unlock some capital through a home equity agreement, when you sell your property, the capital gain that you have can be reduced by the cost of the home equity agreement. So in other words, the amount that you pay by way of a return on investment to the investor can be offset against your overall capital gain. So that means you can be in California, for example. It can work out to cost you a lot less because of the tax advantage that you get, because you can effectively write off the cost of this financing. If it was a loan, you can't do that. With a home equity agreement, you can.
Gotcha. And if you were to turn around and, I don't know, I borrow the $35,000, I make the agreement for the $35,000. Yes. I do that now. And then I turn around, my life plans change. I'm going to move from California to Utah. I sell the house 6 months later. I pretty much am paying you off net at the $35,000 option, or is there kind of like a built-in prepayment penalty, I guess?
The good thing is these are great programs for short-term capital needs. There are no prepayment penalties. So there's nothing to stop you using this as a way of adding value to your property and then selling it, as you said, 6 months later. In fact, a lot of people do that. They unlock some equity and they know that it might cost them a few thousand dollars to access that capital, but they'll make a lot more when they sell their home. So there's no prepayment penalties. You can buy these agreements back at any point. So if you decide that you want to refinance the agreement, let's say we get you back on your feet, your credit score back up to sort of mid 700s, you can then get a HELOC. You might decide to buy this back with a HELOC, at which point we'd send out an appraiser, we'd agree the value of your home, we'd calculate the increase in value, and that's the amount that you would pay on top of the original investment.
And so from your perspective, the investor's perspective on the deal, you're building in some original discount. So I think we were talking about, let's say that $300,000 property, you might give a value of $280,000 perhaps?
Yeah, it depends on the properties. But the other thing is that there is a cap. So on one side, we build in that upside. But obviously, that makes it quite expensive for you as a homeowner if you buy back the agreement in the first few months, for example. So we temper that, or we put a ceiling on the amount that the investor can get as a return. And the amount, or that cap on return, depends on the investors, depends on the agreements. But what that means is, from a homeowner's perspective, it makes it much fairer, because then rather than getting hit for that full sort of equity share, the amount is capped. So it makes it much more in line with a typical sort of hard money cost.
Yeah, that does make sense. It sounds like there's a lot of moving pieces here, and it's not...
You can see the helicopter thing. They're attracting here. A helicopter is, 5,000 lifed parts in search of an oil leak. This is the same sort of thing. And the challenge is trying to explain how this works. So one tends to take it in sort of, step by step, and trying to, trying to explain that this is how the program works, but this is the most you'll pay. So that's our challenge, is trying to articulate this, to the homeowner in a way where they understand it.
It sounds a little bit beyond, I go down to the bank and they have a HELOC rate posted and I kind of know what I'm paying, and it's like simple and they could put it in a brochure. Whereas because every one of these pieces of real estate that your company is looking at is going to have different market characters, it's really going to have a lot of that risk conversation we were talking about, really built in situationally specific, where these caps are different and, the appreciation is different and we're putting a certain value. So there's a lot of moving pieces on every specific deal where it's not a one size fits all.
It's how you present that to the customer is the important thing. So even though behind the scenes there's lots of moving parts, there's only really one or two critical pieces of information to the homeowner. First is, how much can I get? Second thing is, how much is it going to cost me? And the third thing is, how much do I have to pay now? So in reverse order, there's no out-of-pocket expenses now. And we can use technology to deliver these types of quotations to people with things like sliding scales. So this is the amount that we can offer you. Now, slide your scale here if your house goes up this much, this is how much you'd probably pay us back. It goes to that much. So that gives you an idea of what it actually means in real life. So there's some great tools out there that present this in a way that makes it very digestible for the average homeowner.
Gotcha. So as far, this is what, all 50 states are you selecting?
No, 19 states at the moment. So we work, we have our own capital sources. We also work with the other providers in this space. So we can offer a wide range of these programs to the people we speak to.
And where do your clients typically come from? Are they listening in on podcasts and are raising your hand there? Or are you kind of doing direct outreach to specific neighborhoods and markets?
All of the above. We have a direct to consumer advertising strategy. So we use a lot of social media ads. A lot of stuff goes on in Facebook. Funnily enough, you get lots of conversations going on with these ads, lots of questions and answers. And we also, again, have the what we're doing today. So, you know, podcasts and videos and seminars. We also have a lot of channel partners. So CPAs, attorneys, investment advisors, people that talk to customers who have equity in their homes and offer this as a solution. So we have a lot of referrals that come to us as well. And I think over the next few years, I think this is going to become much more of a mainstream product. So we're going to see more adoption. To quote your example, when you go into the bank, this will be the HELOC. But if you can't qualify for a HELOC, can I talk to you about a home equity agreement? So I think this is a product that will become mainstream because, you know, there's $18 trillion of equity in residential homes. And there isn't really a large-scale solution for that without being debt. And so the market is ripe. There's lots of demand out there to tap into this asset class. So I think we'll see a lot of growth and a lot of movement in this over the coming years.
Gotcha. It seems you're casting a wide net and it's not neighborhood specific. So in my mind, I'm a direct to consumer, but I'm like kind of looking for certain neighborhoods. I'm only marketing in five counties around the Chicago area because that's where we do business, right? I would have thought maybe, you know, there's a certain price point of home. So I'm selecting a cut of the homes that kind of fit that model if I'm in your shoes and marketing to them. But I'm surprised to hear you're kind of have this like wider, you know, fishing with the net philosophy and then pulling up a variety of properties at anywhere in the value spectrum across the board. Is there a value too low or too high that you do or don't get into?
The minimum value is around 200. The maximum is 5 million. Because anything above 5 million becomes very difficult to price.
Yeah, you're right about that.
And so typically the sweet spot's around, as we do a lot of work in California, they're around $600,000 to
$800,000. Gotcha.
You know, the average transaction size, again, 80 to 100,000, that sort of figure.
So let's talk about how these are funded. You'd mentioned Crowd Venture funding as your platform that you put together.
That was originally, the money today to fund these comes from institutions, family offices, hedge funds, long-term capital sources that have an allocation for an asset-backed investment that delivers that sort of leveraged return. So it's effectively an inflation hedge, but the returns are very attractive to this sort of long-term investment pool. Now, we're trying to change that because I think that pool is going to expand. So more and more people will want to get involved in this asset class as it becomes more available. You know, the challenge at the moment is making it fast enough because there's lots of investors out there who are saying, you know, we know that these don't really last for 30 years. The average transaction probably will pay off within sort of 5 to 7 years. And that's the sort of duration that I can work with as an investor. So there's, you know, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars chasing these types of investment today. So the challenge, as I said, is how quickly you can originate them. Our plan, though, is to bring this to a more consumer or a more retail audience. And whether we're doing that or through our platform is to we plan to work with regulated entities to enable us to slice and dice these investments so that people can build a portfolio. And so whether you have the sort of portfolio behind you of direct investments, people will be able to use our platform and buy into fractions of these home equity agreements, and then ultimately trade them as well. So once I've held, you know, a small interest in a property in Newport Beach, I might decide to sell that. So we're building a secondary market to try and create tradability and liquidity in what we believe is an incredibly exciting asset class.
Yeah, that's interesting, because that answers my next question, which was whether these kind of trade hands, you can buy a note, right? But you're buying a note, not in your specific business, but, you know, a real estate note. There's unpaid balance of $20,000. They're making $300 payments, and I'm buying it for $16,000. I have my upside built in. However, I am taking 100% of the risk on that asset, that borrower, and that, you know, that specific situation. But you talk about slicing and dicing, and I feel like, okay, I kind of get queasy about, I'm going to put $35,000 of my money into this one specific contract that you had underwritten versus, I don't know, maybe it's seven different contracts at $5,000 per, and now I have a little bit of mitigation, and I have returns popping at different periods of time.
Absolutely. That's so, exactly. So at the moment, they're all done through, at the moment, the investment comes into a fund or a pool. Okay. So effectively, the investor has that exposure across a diversified pool of assets. From a retail perspective, though, you're right. What we don't want to do is say you can just invest in one. We want to be able to give you the opportunity to create a portfolio, different types of homes, different geographies, different return profiles, different MSAs, where you can literally, you know, buy into, as you were saying, a little bit here, a little bit there, build my portfolio based on, you know, what my views are about the real estate market. Do I want to put all my money in California, or do I want to put it all in New York? I don't know, you know, or somewhere in between. So that's coming down the turnpike in the next few months. So we're pretty close to being able to launch a test version of this to accredited investors. And then once we get the sort of the regulatory approvals that we will need, we'll be able to roll this out to a much wider non-accredited audience and have a much easier way of trading these securities as well.
Yeah, that's a really cool direction that this is going into, because, I mean, my own experience is Philadelphia, Chicago, at where I live, and we're in Atlanta. And Atlanta's market, the appreciation, I think, was like 16% over the last 12 months in the median price versus, I don't know, it's probably 5 or 6 in Chicago, and it maybe it's 7 in Pennsylvania and Philadelphia. So you have this opportunity to buy into those specific markets for whatever characteristic. And I wonder if there becomes more of a, you know, over time, there's going to be this premium, sort of like options trading and stocks, you know?
And that's the great thing about it, is I think that in any market where you've got buyers and sellers, if you've got more buyers than sellers, then things start happening to the price. So premiums start developing. Now, these investments are all based on an underlying net asset value, which is the value of the home, because the appreciation in the contract is driven by the value of the home. Now, that's something that we can model using an enormous amount of data that's available to us. So trying to figure out how residential homes move in terms of their pricing, that job's made easier because there's lots of information. There's Zillow, there's Redfin, there's you know all of these CoreLogic. There's tons of information that is available that gives you an indication of where that price in that house is today compared to where it was this time 6 months ago. So that means that price discovery is easier for this asset class than it would be for something like a commercial property, where you've got to take into account, you know, what are the earnings and what are the expenses and the management costs. So that means it is scalable. And it also means that it's more attractive to smaller investors because it's an asset that they understand. You know, I've always wanted to buy a house in Los Angeles or Hollywood or, you know, San Francisco. Here's my chance to buy into and tap into the appreciation with a couple of $1,000s. And this asset class is not available anywhere else. You can buy into a REIT, but that's different. This way, you're buying into homes that are not for sale, where the owner lives there and you're partners with them. So when the property goes up, you take a share of that profit.
Yeah, and like you said, if you need to sell that share to free up the capital, I mean, it sounds like the platform might offer that opportunity to get out long before the 30 years.
Exactly.
And that, the idea of 30 years.
Exactly. That's the liquidity and tradability. That really unlocks the asset class. And that's what, I mean, obviously, you can never predict what liquidity is going to be. But if you've got the ability to match a willing buyer with a willing seller, that's something that we don't have today. So that's one step in the right direction.
Interesting. So are there any questions I just didn't know to ask that the listeners might be wondering that you would answer?
Well, a couple of things, really. First of all, how long does it take to get a home equity agreement in place? And the answer is normally 4 weeks. That's the average time from the date of the application. Everything's done online. We start the process by pre-approving your home. We can do a soft credit pull just to make sure that everything checks out before you sort of leap in. There's no out-of-pocket expenses, so you don't have to pay for appraisals or anything. We or our investment partners pay for that. And those costs, the direct costs, come out of the amount that we invest. There's normally a once-off 3% fee. So there's a setup fee, a bit like points on a loan. But after that, no more expenses, no more monthly costs or or any charges. And really, it's very easy to find out whether you qualify, because we don't have to do credit checks on you, because your property information is publicly available. So we can give you a very good estimate out of the gate very quickly whether or not we can work with you. I think really that's it. The biggest challenge really is just people understanding and getting comfortable with sharing some of the potential increase in value. Some people just want to hang on to this concept of appreciation, something that may happen in the future. They just don't want to share something that might never happen. So that's one thing. But for the people that do, it's a great way of getting access to capital. But I think those are really the only sort of points I would have added.
All right. So people who are listening right now, I mean, if someone were going to raise their hand and their listener say, okay, so like, how does this affect me? Are we kind of looking for people who might want to borrow and be on that end of the spectrum, or people who would want to invest and potentially want to participate, or both?
At the moment, we're still building out the investment side. So at the moment, our primary focus is working with homeowners who want to access some of their equity. And that's something that we've been doing for the last couple of years. We've got a lot of people who've gone through the doors. So we're able to help you. If you qualify, we can get that started for you today.
All right, cool. So I have a couple wrap-up questions here as we get to the end of our time, Matthew.
Okay.
Book recommendations. Are there one or two books you recommend, at real estate, business, whatever, that maybe you found them impactful or maybe you just know?
Well, funny enough, my partner, Tom Bragelman, who is a guy I've worked with for 7 years, Bragelmann, he wrote a book, published it last year, called The Bank Free Blueprint, which is really just a summation of all of his experiences in investing in real estate, working with developers, working with investors, sitting in the middle, trying to coordinate all of this. So for people that want to look at being an active investor, The Bank Free Blueprint is a great book. And I know that the guy that wrote it does know what he's talking about. So that's the first thing. The second book is really something that I picked up because I've become obsessed by this History Channel series called Vikings. This is a complete sort of non-starter, but I'm now just going back through all of my old history books, just relearning and rediscovering how interesting and exciting the world was 1,000 years ago. So that's completely off track. I'm sorry about that. But nice. It's just funny how just going back to these things, when you look at them first time, you think, oh, that's incredibly dull. Now it's like, wow, I can see how this guy, the kingmaker, the politics and the, it's just such a better understanding of how all of that worked. That's given me a sense of purpose and well-being. Let's put it like that.
Nice. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, when I'm in school, when I'm in like, you know, elementary school and all that, I think it's because we don't really have the context. Like even when I got into college, I didn't really have the context. And I remember helping somebody write a paper, and I was out of college for 4 or 5 years. And she got on the dean's list for like the insights into how the real estate was taken. I forget which revolution happened.
Yes.
But one of the biggest problems in the revolution was that the private property lines got decimated. And so they couldn't figure out who rightfully owned the real estate. And it was the context that you gain as you live longer. Suddenly that's going to shed more light onto those historical situations, the kingmakers, the Vikings, you know, writing the Constitution of the United States. Exactly. I mean, these things are like, this is why they're teaching us, but we don't realize how monumental they were because we can't put ourselves in their shoes, especially maybe not when we're younger.
It's just the ultimate irony, isn't it?
It is.
just give us a clue, you know, so that's, but hopefully, you know, you can get back in and start relearning this before, before it's too late. So that's the other thing I'm looking at.
Nice. So the crown jewel of wisdom, if you had to go back and start over, I don't know, beginning of your career, what would you tell yourself, or maybe how would you get started again if you had all the knowledge, but none of the money in the context?
I think it's just find something that you really are good at and like doing, that is not a me too product, and just stick with it. So I did lots of things that were all related: telecoms, technology, funding platforms. They all helped because they all sort of like tessellated together. But I just remember I had a telecoms company 15 something plus 20 years ago that I sold. Gosh, how time flies. And I'm just thinking, if I had kept that, I regretted it afterwards because I'd spent 3 years building it up. Someone came along, maybe an offer, and I just felt, it was a real pat on the back. So I took the money. But then there's that sense of, I'm going to have to build something all over again now. If I'd have just stuck with that, it would be a huge company by now. Hmm. All of the things, it would have been able to feed me all the things I needed, you know, in terms of growth and satisfaction and money. So this, find something, you know, just stick with it, because become an expert in that field. Roll with the punches, ride the waves, but just stay with it and just grow with it. And then ultimately you become king of that business, because no one else has been able to do it for as long as you, or know as much as you. And again, pick an industry where there's growth. So this doesn't work if you want to become a plumber. There's only so much you can do as a plumber unless you build a plumbing business. Do you see? So in other words, I had great experiences, but my one thing was just find something and just, you know, just grow with it and have the confidence in yourself and the faith that this will grow into something massive. Because if you apply determination, it does. That's the critical component, I think.
Yeah, I would almost button on there. I think I read it in the Bible, or a rabbi or a preacher said once along the way, like, don't despise the small beginnings. And like when we are starting something, I can remember my business, it's like, oh, I'm not that guy doing this and that, you know, my thing is so small. And even today, like little components of my own business still that I'm running, these are like initiatives. And in the beginning, it feels like, and then when I say the beginning, maybe it's something I'm working on for 1, 2, 3 years with a team of 3, 4, 5 people. And we're like not getting the results to justify maybe that time. But it's still that same kind of humble beginning that we're in the middle of. And then, like you said, we become king of this initiative if and when that thing finally gains that momentum. And now it's that thing that people are like looking from the other side saying, I wish I had that specific little initiative or whatever it is. So great.
But then that just becomes the beginning for you, because then you think, I've done this bit. Now I can see the world. It's like what we were saying before. That gives you the perspective to be able to go on and build on that foundation. Whereas if you don't get there, you never have that that breadth of vision.
Yeah, you're right about that. So where can listeners get more Matthew Sullivan, or maybe some information on taking one of these home equity agreements?
Well, everything's on the website. So it's QuantumRE, which is Q U quantumre.com. So we've got all our contact details there. We've got podcast videos. There's a free guide you can download, which explains how programs work. There's a calculator. So we try and keep it fairly simple in terms of the amount of information that is there, because our job is really just to pick up the phone and speak to you and explain to you how this works. And then we can take you on, take you on the pathway to get these, to get your home equity unlocked.
All right. Sounds good. Hey, I appreciate you coming on the show, Matthew. Had a blast.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been great fun. Knowledge. Thanks again for thank you again for having me on.
My favorite way to fund a fix and flip deal is by using private money. I did an episode on raising private money for single family flips a little while back, detailing my entire process with Joe Fairless, as a matter of fact, which you can find at reidiamonds.com by typing raising private money into the search bar. But what if you don't have access to private lenders and need money to get started? Everyone usually talks about hard money, and that's great as long as you have some reserves or a nice chunk of cash in the bank to show the hard money lender in order to get the loan. They like to loan money to people who already have a little bit of money, at least, to be able to cover the payments and any other ancillary construction items that may come up. But one little known and little talked about option is gap funding. And gap funding is a line of credit used to access the funds needed for reserves, business startup costs. I mean, there's really no restriction on how you use the funds. And it's called gap funding because it's used to fill in the gap. The team over at REI Pathway Funding can set you up with gap funding line of credit, which has an initial interest rate of 0%. And in certain cases, if you qualify, it does not show up on your credit report as it's structured as business loans. So to find out how much you might be pre-approved for, go to www.reipathwayfunding.com. Thank you for tuning in to the REI Diamond Show. Remember to review and subscribe on your podcasting app. Just search REI Diamonds and click subscribe. If you're interested in receiving my weekly Big Idea email, where I provide the most valuable jewel of wisdom that I discovered during the recording of the most recent episode, you can sign up at reidiamonds.com. And at that site, you can access the 189-episode archive. Again, that's reidiamonds.com. So far, my company, Diamond Equity Investments, my house flipping company, has bought and sold 95 houses. Well, mostly houses. A few of those deals were apartment buildings. And we currently have 140 more in our inventory, either under construction or under agreement and waiting to close. And I say that to say this. Here are three ways you and I can do business. Number one, are you interested in having access to the best real estate deals in your market? In other words, access to real estate deals that you can buy at a low enough price to actually profit after renovating and reselling? If so, go now to accessrealestatedeals.com. Number two, accredited investors who are seeking double-digit returns, passively investing in my deals, can sign up for our private mortgage investment opportunity emails at fundrehabdeals.com. And number three, finally, I am always buying houses that I can flip and occupied apartment buildings with below market rents. So if you have a deal that fits that description in either the Atlanta, Chicago, or Philadelphia region, please send me an email with the details. We are at the conclusion, my friend. Next up, we have Stephanie Walter joining us to share her experience as a real estate syndicator focusing on multifamily and luxury home development. This shift for her comes after a successful career and exit from the insurance agency business. So we have that and more on the next episode. Keep coming back.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.